Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Glad to have you along. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, I'm thinking I could kind of use a cup of coffee, even though I don't drink coffee today. So we got that,
that fall thing.
Midday kind of, maybe just sitting out in the back porch, letting the sun hit you.
There are times I wish I did drink it for those moments that people just... Yeah. Kind of idolize it, you know, put out there as these pristine moments of calm and tranquility. Then you drink a bunch of coffee and that's gone.
That's gone. Really, we're going to talk coffee in just a moment, but I do want to mention that coming up on in about 15 minutes, we're going to focus on a new book from a pastor on the West Coast called Saturate. And the premise is, you know, many Christians have unwittingly embraced the idea that church is a once-a-week event rather than a community of Spirit-empowered people, that ministry is what pastors do on Sundays rather than the 24/7 calling of all believers. We're going to talk about being disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life, and we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. So stick around for that. We do have some copies of that book to give away as well, but first, we want to talk a little bit about coffee. You wonder, you know, can drinking your morning cup of coffee change lives eternally in Honduras? Our spotlight, our ministry spotlight this month here on Faith Radio is Hope Coffee. And by building homes and digging wells and sponsoring churches, Hope Coffee builds relationships with those in coffee-growing communities. We're going to find out more about it. You can go to myfaithradio.com right now and search Ministry Spotlight to learn more. Or you can just hang on as we talk with Brian Masters, who's the director of Hope Coffee USA. And he has got a background experience in missions, and we want to just find out from Brian what Hope Coffee is all about. So, Brian, tell us, what is Hope Coffee?
Well, it is a great ministry enterprise that God kind of opened for us. It is connected with a missionary agency. It's actually been around 125 years this year, called Camino Global, and Hope Coffee was a birthed out of that from one of our missionaries in Honduras who saw the need for a souvenir product that profit from that product would go towards sharing the gospel there in Honduras. And so that's kind of where it began, about 2009, and we launched it up here in the United States in 2011, and we continue to use our profit to share the gospel there.
You're working with local coffee growers, right? And then you're handling the distribution here, and so the proceeds can get back to Honduras, right?
Exactly. It's kind of a cycle or circle, if you want to call it that. But we buy coffee from a group of coffee farmers that have very small plots there where they normally couldn't get a good price for their coffee because they have such small quantities of it. So we're buying from them and then importing it, and then as we roast it and sell it here in the United States, we send our profit back to the Honduran churches there to share the gospel in their communities. And so they're the ones who are reaching out and sharing the gospel as they build a home for a widow or put a roof on a house or a concrete floor in a home or provide a water storage unit for different families.
Say a little bit more about the kinds of things that you're doing. It's not just handing out evangelism tracts.
Exactly. The pastors there are encouraged to engage in their community in a unique way that meets some of the physical and spiritual needs of some of the families there. And so they're actively looking for different families in their communities who don't know Christ and have a need for their home or for shelter, for water, for different things like that. And so as they find those, they bring them to our group down there in Honduras and say, here's the families that we want to help. And it's a real partnership between the church and believers up here in the United States who buy our coffee and then the Honduran church itself and the family being helped. It's kind of like a Habitat for Humanity model where the family comes alongside and helps as well as the church is there doing the work on that particular day as well.
As you said, these are the coffee growers are probably, small plots where they wouldn't be able to
maybe wouldn't get a very good price, but it's still great quality coffee, though, isn't it?
Excellent coffee. It is high grown, up 4,000 feet or above, and it, on the cupping scale in the coffee world, it's a very high grade, specialty grade coffee. But they do a great job growing it and, you know, picking it, harvesting it, and then it goes into a small co-op or association of farmers that they're able to control the processing so that the coffee and the quality of the coffee stays there and continues on through the process. And so, you know, it's a way to provide higher wages for those farmers who have very small sections of land, but they're able to get a higher price for their coffee, which is great as well.
So when we purchase some Hope coffee, I guess maybe we'd talk about how we do that, where we get that, and then just sort of follow it back. What happens then?
Okay. The easiest way to purchase it is on our website at hopecoffee.com. We ship all over the United States. We supply coffee to hundreds of churches across the United States. Churches drink a lot of coffee. And we supply businesses as well, and individuals can buy. We have just launched this week the pre-order of our single-serve cup that works in a Keurig machine. And so you can be drinking that at home or in your small office and different things as well. But as you're buying that coffee, we're taking our profit from that and giving that to the Honduran church to do these kind of ministry projects. And so it's a way to partner together as a body of believers and walk alongside our Honduran brothers and sisters and hopefully other parts of the world as well as we continue to grow and expand.
And maybe just a story or two about someone's life who has been impacted or changed as a result of this connection.
Oh, certainly. One of the recent ones actually that happened in August, a pastor in Tela, which is on the coast there in Honduras, they'd been doing a water project and building a water storage unit for this particular family in their neighborhood there in the community. And the gentleman that they were building this for and his family, they're part of the Garifuna tribe, which is kind of a different culture that's there in Honduras. They speak Creole. They're from Africa, but they interact well. They speak Spanish, and they speak Creole as well. And this gentleman, as they were building the water storage unit and different things, he heard the gospel, and they come from more of a witchcraft-type background in that. And so understanding who Christ was a very unique thing. And he came to trust Christ early part of August this year, right after that project was completed. And so it's those things where pastors are reaching out in their community and helping people in different needs and just sharing the gospel and seeing God work in their lives.
And Brian, we have several of our staff who are big fans of Hope Coffee. Some conversation about what's the best blend. Anything that you'd like to recommend?
Well, the one that is the number one seller, we're not sure why, if it's the name or different things, but our medium roast. It's a unique roast in that, but we sell a lot of that as well. But we have a bold and a dark. The dark is not bitter. It's a very smooth flavor. And we've recently, in the last year and a half, we created an espresso roast if you have an espresso machine as well that works. And we use that at our – we have a small coffee shop on the campus of Dallas Theological Seminary, and they use that espresso roast there, and it's been very well received.
Brian, thanks for this great outreach and the opportunity that we have to partner with you. And I'm sure you're always looking for, you know, churches or other ministries that may want to just take on Hope Coffee as something for their coffee shops and everything else, right?
Yes, sir. We would love a lot of different people to join us all across the country, and we appreciate you sharing our story and partnering with us in that. Thank you very much.
Find out more at hopecoffee.com, or you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and search the keyword Ministry Spotlight to learn more about Hope Coffee, and now you can be part of the life-changing work taking place in Honduras from your kitchen counter. And Brian Masters joining us today with the update. Brian, blessings to you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. I appreciate your time as well. Have a great day.
You know, Ted, that's our Ministry Spotlight, but during our fall fundraiser, we also kind of introduced the idea, and for those that gave at that $30 a month level or above, they received a Faith Radio mug and some Hope Coffee, a little sample of Hope Coffee.
Yeah, very good. And some more description about what it's about there. Yeah. We still are shipping out a couple boxes, so if you're waiting for yours, it's on the way. But I think
and if you'd still, if you'd like to join with us at that $30 a day level, Team 360, you can get that Hope Coffee and the mug, and we'd love to have you join with us on Faith Radio. You can go to myfaithradio.com if you want to make your gift online. Or, of course, you can call us anytime, the Faith Line at 877-93-FAITH. And to find out more about Hope Coffee and about our ministry. Now, stick around, because coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about being disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. What does it look like to live for Jesus in the everyday ordinary? We'll find out as we discover a new book called Saturate. Find out what that's all about in just ahead, in moments on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned.
There are so many ways we want to help, so many needs we wish we could reach out and meet. But the number of challenges in our neighborhoods and communities can overwhelm us. Yet there is something we can do, and it's powerful. Friends and neighbors across the Upper Midwest are banding together to pray. Here's a warm invitation to join us in the Faith Radio Prayer Team. You'll stay updated with what's on the hearts of your neighbors across the region, as together we do the most important thing we can. You can get started when you find the Faith Radio Prayer Team at myfaithradio.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Connecting Faith. I'm looking forward to spending some time today talking about how we can live for Jesus, how we can be disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. And what does that look like? We'll discover more as we welcome to the microphone Jeff Vanderstelt, who is the visionary leader of the Soma family of churches and the leading teaching pastor at the Doxa Church in Bellevue, Washington. And when he isn't preaching or mentoring church planters, he and his family share life with their missional communities. Author of the book Saturate, Being Disciples of Jesus in the Everyday Stuff of Life. It's a recent publication from Crossway. And Jeff, maybe just welcome, first of all, by way of maybe introduction, you were living in the Midwest in the Chicago area for a while and ended up getting transplanted out to Washington State. But just tell us a little bit about your passion for church planting and how Saturate kind of came to be.
Yeah, I actually grew up in Michigan, moved to Seattle in 91 as a youth pastor, and then back to the Midwest in Chicago doing some youth pastor work there in two different churches. And in that process of being a youth pastor in three or four different churches throughout my ministry life, came to realize that students, when were trained and developed and mentored, were able to do great work in terms of making disciples who would make disciples. And yet I would see them graduate oftentimes into what the students called big church. And oftentimes they were encouraged to primarily take a seat, attend the service, and in some cases just watch someone else do all the ministry. And I think after watching that happen for about 12 years, I came to a conclusion that I think we've got to rethink what it means to call people to be the church in everyday life and to really validate the call to be a disciple maker, knowing that some will do it in different ways, but that all of us who love Jesus and follow him are called to that ministry. So that really led to coming back to the Northwest, where my wife is actually from, and starting to plant churches in the greater Puget Sound area. I moved back about 13 years ago.
Well, planting churches is one of those opportunities to start something new and fresh, and maybe it's something that hasn't been done that way before. And obviously, you're in an area where maybe spiritual interests, at least in traditional churches, maybe isn't all that high. So you do have some opportunities to try something new, don't you?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, coming to the Northwest, where the large majority would not want to go to a church on Sunday. Many of them would identify themselves as the nuns on the religious statement when they're asking what religion you're a part of, and most of them will say none. So there is a real need to help the church rethink how do we make disciples, both of those who don't yet know Jesus, but also those who do, so they could be better disciple makers themselves.
The word saturate's an interesting word, and we want to land on that a little bit. That's the title of your new book, Saturate. By the way, we do have some copies, five copies to give away. Love to have you sign up for the drawing on that. Whenever we have resources to give away, we always like to do a drawing at the end of the hour. So give us a call and get your name in for that, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And, of course, you're welcome to ask a question and join the conversation as well. We always enjoy that. So in the book, you make the statement that Jesus' saturation can't happen through you until it happens to you. Just say a bit more about that.
Yeah, it's important to clarify what I mean by Jesus' saturation. It starts back in, I think, Habakkuk, and when the prophet spoke of a day when the knowledge of the glory of the Lord would cover the earth as the water covers the sea, which really is a saturation point. And then later we hear the Apostle Paul speaking in particular to the church in Ephesus in chapter 1. At the end, verses 22 and 23, he talks about Jesus being the head of his church in which he fills all in all. So you see a complete kind of saturation of the presence of Christ through his church. And then in Colossians 1:27, we hear the Apostle Paul say, it's Christ in you, the hope of glory. So the idea that God's glory would spread to all the earth is that he happens through filling his people with his presence. So a big part of what I meant by that statement is, if we're going to bring Jesus to the everyday stuff of life, Jesus has got to enter into our life and begin to change every aspect of our life. So we become a visual example of transformation that Jesus brings about in us, so that he can also bring it about through us.
We, as you said, being a youth pastor, you're training students, and they were, effective at discipling and bringing others, but then suddenly they sort of graduated to big church. So what have we missed, and how have we maybe lost that call to discipleship in the everyday stuff of life?
Well, I think with students, the thing that if anybody's ever been working with student ministry, they realize that, students' minds are on school, sports, friends, dating, all these things that they're dealing with. And so much of our teaching and instruction when you're a youth pastor is, first of all, helping them apply the gospel to that, the everyday stuff that they're going through. But then second, at least for me, I never wanted to put on an event that primarily students would just attend. I wanted to equip and train them so they could see themselves as missionaries sent to their campuses. And I don't know that a lot of times the church sees itself as an equipping organization. My observation is oftentimes church leaders, whether they intend to or not, communicate to their people that church is really Sunday, or church is what happens in the building. And even we'll say things like, if you really want to get serious about doing something for the Lord, leave your job and, come work for the church, because that's the greatest work. And unfortunately, what we're communicating is that the majority of their life really doesn't matter. At least it can't be seen as the ministry of the church. It's something separate. Instead of seeing the church as the people of God who are sent by the presence of God through his Spirit to be his people, his church on mission in everyday life. And then Sunday becomes a part of that. It equips, it encourages, it inspires, it motivates, it mobilizes. But I think what has happened is many church leaders have seen what they do on Sunday as the totality of a lot of their discipleship. So come, hear me speak, come to our Sunday school classes, or come to our training, and that's really discipleship. Instead of, no, you are the disciples who make disciples in everyday life, and we are given to the church to equip you, Ephesians 4 tells us that, for the ministry that God's sending you to in all of life. So I really think we've misunderstood discipleship as primarily getting people either to come to faith in Jesus and that's it, or to come to classes and learn more about it, which those are important things. Those are just not sufficient in and of themselves. It's so much more holistic than just that.
So is it as much of maybe pastors or church leaders misunderstanding what their roles are? And, and maybe we should talk about that. What is the pastor's job? I mean, you kind of had to do that as you were planting churches, I know, and interacting with, new members of your community. They wondered, what is it that you're doing, right?
Yeah. When I read Ephesians 4 and it says he's given different people to the church, it's clear the reason he's given them is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And I think a lot of pastors wrongly assume that they are the ministers to the church. So they've been given to the church to do the ministry for the church instead of they've been given to the church to equip the church for the ministry. And I think that fundamental misunderstanding of our role, if you're a pastor or a leader in the church, is what leads to a lot of, hey, come to my church, come to our ministry. I'm the minister and you support my ministry. You give to it, you volunteer in it, you bring your friends to hear me. I think that when we get that wrong, then what happens is we only have a couple ministers in the church, and those are the people that are, quote unquote, the staff or the pastor, the paid person, instead of realizing that actually every member of the body of Christ is a minister of the gospel. They're just sent to minister in different places. And then the job of the leadership of the church is to equip those people to do the ministry and to see everyday life as the ministry that they're involved in. So I think that, if one, it's a wrong understanding of our role, I think, as pastors. I think, second, I think we've misunderstood discipleship. I think many of us have bought into the idea that discipleship is either just leading people to Christ. It's, you know, it's the evangelism aspect of it in terms of getting them to come to faith in Christ, while others have maybe thought of it as, you know, it's really teaching spiritual disciplines, or it's, you know, getting them through a curriculum. And so oftentimes it's very limited in its perspective, instead of, no, this is discipleship is leading people to submit every aspect of life to Jesus Christ, and so that you show the world what it looks like to follow Jesus in everything you do, and leading others to do that by being an example, but then also being able to teach others how to do that because you're in life with them, showing them what it looks like. I think that not only a wrong understanding of our role, but wrong understanding of what life actually is what's hurting us.
Well, you had opportunity to put that theory, I guess if you'd call it that, in the biblical understanding, more clear biblical understanding, into practice as you were planting churches and trying to come up with this with a community. And so I want to just, we've got a couple minutes here before the break, but maybe just start telling a little about your story of it. How did you and your wife decide that, okay, this, we're going to be for the ministry? What does that look like in the being disciples in the everyday stuff of life?
Yeah, it really looked like us starting what we now call missional communities, but for most people, it would just look like a small group that resembles a little bit of what Jesus did with his disciples, and that we gathered people around, we ate meals with them, we engaged in normal life together, we started serving people around us, we opened our homes and exercised hospitality. We basically said that the best place to do ministry is in home, in neighborhood, in everyday life. And so we took a group of people, trained them how to do that, and we let them know, this isn't going to end with you. We want this to go on from you. So several months, we want to send you out to go do the same thing and gather a group of people around you, identify people you want to see come to faith in Jesus. Could be a neighborhood that you're involved in. It could be a network of relationships you have. And then you together will show what it looks like to love one another like Jesus loved us, to serve like he served us, and to proclaim the gospel of Jesus to them with the hope that you'll lead them to come and know Jesus as well in just normal everyday stuff of life. And so it went from one group to four to eight to 16. It just continued to grow. And that's how our first church really got planted. And then that's been passed on around the country and even now around the world, as more and more people are realizing that the normal everyday stuff of life is where discipleship is meant to happen. And I think as more are doing that, the more normative it becomes for a normal person to be a disciple maker, instead of the few professionals that we tend to kind of think of as the church. So we've just been continuing to equip and train and see that spread throughout the world now.
We'll talk about some of the primary focuses, the missional focuses of the group. So we talk more with Jeff Vanderstelt in just a moment. We're talking about Saturate, being disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. It is the title of the new book from Jeff, and we've got some copies available. You can sign up for that at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We'll talk a little bit about the importance of food and listening and blessing others and celebrating and more coming up here in a moment. Jeff Vanderstelt, visionary leader for the Soma family of churches and lead teaching pastor at Doxa Church in Bellevue, Washington. You can join the conversation with a call at 877-933-2484, or you can drop us a note at the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. We're talking Saturate. That's the title of a new book from Jeff Vanderstelt. Jeff's a pastor, preaching pastor at Doxa Church in Bellevue, Washington, and he's the visionary leader for the Soma family of churches, and they've spread across the country and around the globe now. He's a church planter. When he isn't preaching or mentoring church planters, he and his family share life with their missional community, and we're learning more about what that looks like. We've got some copies of the book Saturate to give away at 877-933-2484, and in the book you address, we'll get into some of those kind of the main points and sort of what works and what doesn't, but there's a couple of maybe important aspects that you list for us kind of at the beginning of the book. Is about the understanding salvation, past, present, and future. Maybe just say a bit more about that to kind of help set up our conversation.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, when they hear, I've been saved language, or, you know, my friend was saved, or they hear the language of salvation, they tend to think primarily past. In other words, I was saved from the penalty of sin. I was lost, now I'm found. I was an enemy of God, now I'm a child of God. And that's absolutely imperative that we get that we understand that. In a sense, we understand justification by faith rightly. But then there's also the present reality that even the Apostle Paul uses the language in 1 Corinthians 15, that we are being saved, that there's a present tense reality that not only have we been saved, but there's a work of God still going on in us on a daily basis, that we are being saved from the power of sin. So not only have we been saved from the penalty, but we're saved from the power. We're being saved from the power of sin to overcome, to live a new life, to be set free from the slavery that we used to be in, and we can live a new life today. And most often people will call that sanctification. But sometimes people think sanctification is just something I do versus it's the work that God is doing in me, and in my participation with him, we're walking a new life together. And then there's the future reality of salvation, that we will be saved. 1 Peter 1 tells us that there is a salvation kept in heaven for us that can't be defiled, it will not fade. It's a future hope that we can have confidence that what God began, he will finish. And I found that, especially in mission, when we don't have an understanding of the present reality of our salvation, meaning we are being changed out by God's grace today, and the future hope, then a lot of times people make salvation primarily about just getting someone to cross the line of faith, as it were, but not to continue to walk in the grace of the gospel that continues to change them. And if you're calling people on a mission, I've found if they don't have a future hope, then oftentimes their fear of what the future might hold kind of keeps them back from stepping out in faith and trusting God is in charge of every moment and even in our tomorrow. And so a lot of times, because we're afraid of the future, we don't actually step out in faith and get on mission with Jesus to make disciples for fear of what we might lose. But when we're confident that he saves us in the past, is saving us present, and will save us in the future, then we have great confidence to step out by faith, trusting that he'll hold us and he'll keep us and he'll give us all we need in everything he calls us to do.
And he calls us, whatever he calls us to do, he calls us to do it in community, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, actually, it's an interesting thing. I've found that a lot of people tend to think of salvation primarily in personal terms, and a lot of times they think of their faith that way, too. I have a personal relationship with God. I have my own personal quiet time. You know, a lot of the preaching and teaching that I receive is applying to personal application of the text. But when you read the Bible, the majority of the scripture is written to a people, and it was meant to be obeyed in community and on mission. You see Jesus saying in John 13, this is how they'll know you're my disciples, by your love for one another. And then in John 17, he prays that for our unity and that we would remain in the world, not get out of the world. And his desire is that we would love one another in community, that we experience unity in front of a broken world, and that it would be the gospel that's transforming us in such a way that when we're in the middle of the world loving one another like he loved us, that the world would take notice that, man, this is powerful. Nobody loves like you guys do. No one is committed to one another like you guys are committed to one another. Clearly, the gospel has power to transform, which then when we proclaim the gospel, not only do they hear the power of God, but they actually see the power of God changing the way we love one another, the way we live in a broken world in a way that's radically different than the world lives.
So give us just an example or two of how those that are in your community, or maybe those outside the community before they came on board, saw the commitment and the love that you had for one another. What did that look like? I mean, that's in the everyday, ordinary stuff of life.
Yeah, you know, there's so many examples, and I give quite a few in the book, but one in particular that I'll share is a neighbor of ours. Her name is Nikki. Her husband had passed away from cancer previously, 15 years prior to us moving in next door, and she was a hoarder and a recluse and really just kept herself from people. But we continued to reach out to her lover, I cut her lawn, our missional community would try to keep inviting her over for meals whenever we'd have try to invite her into the normal stuff of life that just people do, but invited her to be in it with us, to treat her like she was a family member. And she refused for probably a year and a half to 2 years, and then she experienced a pretty significant need in her life. Her van had broken down, and she eventually had to get to the hospital, was having some problems, and so she finally showed up on her front doorstep and said, I didn't want to call an ambulance, didn't want anybody to know that I'm in need, but I know that you guys have continued to reach out to me, so I felt like I could trust you. And so we spent the week in the hospital with her, our community, visited her, brought her flowers, sat with her during, times when she would have been alone. At the end of that, when she got out, we paid to have her van fixed, because that's what you do with your own family. She started joining us for meals. Eventually, as we continue to build a relationship, it's Thanksgiving together, Christmas together, Easter together, just all the stuff you would do if you were family. And we just started doing that with her, and eventually got to fix up some of her house. She wouldn't let us in, but she would let us around it. She's pretty embarrassed still to let people in. So we helped clean up the backyard that was completely overrun with blackberry bushes, and we built a little community garden in the back for her, and just started to love her like she was a mom, and if she was our mother, how would we care for her? And what happened, of course, is the whole neighborhood starts watching this, and they're seeing, like, why are you reaching out to this woman? Like, she's pushed everybody away. You should give up on her. Everybody else has. And they saw us faithfully commit to her regardless of how she responded. And over time, it won her over, but it won many of our neighbors over as well, as they watched us just engage her in life like she belonged to the family. And I've learned that if you want people to understand what the Father, what God the Father is like and what His love is like for us, we got to love others like family so they can experience His love through us. And then when we talk about His love, they already know it. They've already experienced it come through His family to them. So that's what we did with her. And over time, she came to faith in Jesus. And about a year ago now, she passed away. We got to walk with her for many years with Jesus. And in her passing, her daughter and her grandson also have now come into the community and started to experience this family on mission, and just started being brought in to the community. And since then, now her grandson has come to faith. And it was through the same kind of stuff, eating meals together, hanging out, just being in life together, helping each other's, working at each other's homes, in each other's yards, you name it. In fact, when Nikki died, they invited us to come help them, and we took out probably about 15,000 pounds of garbage out of that house, spent about 2 months cleaning it up, and just through that process got to lead her son, grandson Jonathan, to Christ as well. So it's just engaging normal stuff of life, but doing it with a gospel intentionality.
And it's interesting that a question like that could really make all the difference. How would we treat her if she was our mom? Or, a question like that. I mean, it's really what you're saying. The people that you're in neighborhood that's your community, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah, and that's actually a question we continue to encourage people to ask, is if God would love you while you were still a sinner, but He would love you like He loved His own son, Jesus, then He loved you like family when you were an enemy. So what if we believe that God was sending us to our neighborhood, or sending us to our workplace, or sending us into a community to love people who don't yet belong to the family in such a way that they knew what it was like to belong to the family before they ever believed in God's love for them through Jesus. And so even just asking that question, how would I love my neighbors if I love them like my brothers or sisters? And some people might go, I don't love my brothers and sisters very well. So it's like, well, we need to redeem that and ask, how did Jesus love us like brothers and sisters, even though we weren't? But that should inform then how we would love people like family in our neighborhood, so that they can both experience the love of God and see it in tangible form while they also get to hear us speak about it.
You build that around six sort of pillars. You talk about focuses in your community: eat, listen, story, bless, celebrate, and recreate. Let's just eating. We'll start with that because that comes up pretty often. I think that's is food and parties maybe kind of a central part of what it means to be a Christian disciple.
Yeah, you know what the reason we came up with those six, we call them rhythms, because they're rhythms of life you engage in all the time. And we realized that a lot of people didn't know how to be disciples in the everyday stuff of life because they didn't realize that stuff like eating meals together should be one of the primary ways we think about being a disciple. Because you're going to eat probably 21 a week. If you just engage those intentionally with a gospel mindset, then you would start thinking about eating a meal a very different way. You know, we start in the very beginning in Genesis where that's where God says, this is how you're going to show that you trust me, is by how you eat. Don't eat this tree, but eat all these other ones, and that's your way of expressing that you trust what I say to be good. And it's interesting that through the entire narrative of the Bible, meals play a gigantic part in calling God's people to remember his deliverance from Egypt, or to remember his provision, and ultimately to remember his provision of Jesus. And so even our regular meal that the church is meant to remember Jesus through is something that should hearken us back to Jesus being the bread of life given to us. And so that Passover meal's fulfillment in Jesus is a big part of just us learning how to worship around the table. But then if you engage the table like Jesus did, that you eat with people who need to see what it's like to live unto the Lord in all we do, whether we eat or drink, we do all to the glory of God. When you begin to do that, you actually have a great opportunity to call someone who doesn't yet know Jesus to see that the table is a great place to express your faith in Jesus, whether that's just giving thanks, whether that's eating with great joy, whether that's listening to one another's stories, getting to know each other's hearts. It's amazing, if you pay attention, how much happens around the table in Jesus' ministry as you read the Gospels. And so just teaching people how to engage in meals more intentionally, I'll often even do this. I'll say, hey, just take three meals a week and do them more intentionally. Eat one meal together with believers, you know, maybe the people that you're on mission with. Then eat one meal, or then provide one meal a week to somebody who's in need. It could be a mom who just gave birth, you know, has a baby at home and they need some help. It could be someone you know doesn't get much food. Maybe it's opening your table at your house to invite a neighbor over, but serve one meal a week to somebody. And then third, eat one meal at least with someone who doesn't yet know Jesus, and look for an opportunity just to get to know their story and find out how to care for them well, and bless them, and hopefully share the gospel with them eventually. If we just engage three meals intentionally a week like that, I'm convinced most people would have more opportunity to make disciples than they've ever had by just trying to invite someone to come to their church service on Sunday.
We're talking about being disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. The book is called Saturate. Jeff Vanderstelt is the author. He's the visionary leader of the Soma family of churches and the lead teaching pastor at Doxa Church in Bellevue, Washington. And he's mentoring in church planters and preaching around the country. And we're honored to have him with us today. We've got some copies of Jeff's book to give away. And we invite you to sign up for that drawing here. We've got four or five copies that we can give away here at the end of the hour. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number to sign up for that. And you may have a question or comment, something you've heard so far, sparked some reaction. Join in with us at 877-933-2484. More on Saturate, being disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. We'll talk about listening and blessing and celebrating and more just ahead.
Can your choice of morning coffee make an eternal difference? By building homes, digging wells, and sponsoring churches, Hope Coffee builds relationships with those in disadvantaged coffee-growing communities in the country of Honduras. And this month, you can come alongside this remarkable effort as we shine the October Ministry Spotlight on Hope Coffee. Learn more and discover how you can help change lives from your kitchen counter when you search Ministry Spotlight at myfaithradio.com.
Org.
Like to live for Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. That's what we're talking about today with Jeff Vanderstelt, who's authored the book Saturate. It's from Crossway And we got some copies to give away, and hope that you'll sign up for that with a call. Jeff is a teaching pastor at Doxa Church in Bellevue, Washington, and he's the visionary leader for the Soma Family of Churches. He's been a church planter for a number of years and helping us understand what it means to being a disciple in the everyday stuff of life. We've just learned a little bit about, you know, if we just did a few meals a week intentionally, what a difference that could make. There's some other rhythms that you address. Listen, story, bless, celebrate, recreate. Say a word about each of those, Jeff.
Yeah, so as we are eating together, one of the things we want to do, and whether we're eating together or not, is learn how to listen well. We're always listening. The question is, are we paying attention to who or what we're listening to? And as followers of Jesus, we want to continue to learn how to listen backwards to what he's already told us in his word, and then listen forward as his spirit leads us to live a life that's in submission to Jesus. So there's that posture of listening to God that's very important, but then listening to one another in such a way that we can pay attention to what the cry of the heart is saying, what the narrative of someone's story is crying out for. And so we're opening our ears wide to just say, Lord, would you not only speak to us through your word, speak to us in the moment, but then lead us to listen well to the people around us, whether they know Jesus or not. If we're not taking the time to listen well, we won't know how to bring good news into their life, whether that's practically expressing the good news or speaking it. And so listen well. And then story is the third one, which means everyone is living their life under a grand narrative. We as followers of Jesus have a redemptive narrative. We know the story of God and how it's changing our life and changing history and changing the world. And most people who don't, if you don't know that story, they're living under another storyline. It could be how their parents treated them, how they were hurt by someone, maybe a hope that they have in the future that they're longing for. And so we want to listen well so we hear their story. And as we get to know their story, we're going to be able to do a better job of learning how to both bless them well, which is the fourth rhythm, but also be able to share the gospel to them well, because we'll know what it is they are longing for. A lot of times I think the reason why people aren't very effective in sharing the good news of Jesus is because we don't know the questions that people are asking. As we get to know their story, we'll get to know the longings of the heart, we'll get to know the questions that they're asking, and we'll be able to really speak the truth of Jesus to what they really need in that moment, or at least what they perceive to need. And then the fourth one's bless, and that is that we've not only been blessed for ourselves, but we've blessed to be a blessing. So we start to look at everything we have and say, God, how could we love one another like family with what we have? How could we serve others with what we have? How could we be a missionary people sent to bring blessing into a culture? And so we start asking that question, Lord, who can we bless? How can we bless them? As we get to know them, we'll know how to care for them well and how to bless, whether it's in words or in deed. But we start to then bless. And as we get to bless people, then we'll have plenty of reason to talk to them about why we celebrate. And that's the fifth one, that we're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate together really well. As believers in Jesus, we should be the most celebratory people on the planet, because we have more to celebrate than anybody. And so our gatherings together are celebratory. We celebrate birthdays. We celebrate anniversaries. We celebrate just life until we become joy-filled, celebratory people. And you even look at the, you know, the narrative throughout the Old Testament. God called his people to have celebrations as a normal part of their life. And so we start celebrating and invite people into the celebration and let them know that this is all because of the grace of God that we can celebrate the way we do. And then we might even have to walk into the broken celebrations of our culture and bring redemption into the parties that don't know the good news of Jesus. And Jesus does that in the first miracle in the wedding feast in Cana. He brings better wine, as it were, to a broken party. And so we get to bring redemption into the broken celebrations of our world and show that the Lord wants to redeem all things for his glory, including the celebration. And then last, recreate, which means we learn to walk in that rhythm of resting, that's the re, and the create, working. So we learn how to work at rest. We learn how to rest at work. We need to learn how to rest from our work. We also learn how to do like really creative, good work in the world that shows the truth about what God's like. And so we become hardworking people, we become well-rested people, we become playful people, we become creative, restorative people. And so we start to engage in the rhythm of work and rest and play and restoration as a part of what it looks like to show the kingdom of God breaking into the world. So those are the six key rhythms. And and the interesting thing is we're doing all of them all the time. The question is, are we doing them with a heart to worship Jesus? Are we doing them with an intentional discipleship focus? Are we doing with gospel intentionality informing them? And that's a big part of what I talk about in the book is we don't necessarily need to add more to our life. We might just need to do what we're already doing with gospel intentionality.
Good word. It's the word saturate. That's what we're focusing on today, being disciples of Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. Jeff, you talk pretty openly in your community, your, you know, I guess maybe small group is how we'd understand it, but it's your friends and neighbors that you're doing life together, and that that can involve conflict, you know, tempers, all sorts of things. So how do we approach conflict when we're living as family?
You know, the interesting thing is a lot of us have been taught that conflict is bad. And the, when you watch the ministry of Jesus Christ, you see that there are many moments where he brings people into a conflict. He brings them into a situation where conflict happens, where something about their heart gets brought out or something about what's broken in their life gets dealt with. And I've come to the conclusion that conflict oftentimes, if you're walking with Jesus, conflict oftentimes is God's way of bringing to the surface something that needs to be dealt with in a way that might bring transformation to somebody's life. And so when you're on mission with people, anybody who's been on a mission trip knows this, you're going to experience conflict, but usually that conflict is connected to selfishness, to pride, to fear, to insecurity, to lack of confidence in Jesus, something. And what happens is if we're willing to see that the conflict is just revealing our need for Jesus, our need for grace, our need for forgiveness, our need for someone to love us well towards Jesus, then conflict becomes the beginning of a discipleship opportunity. And we look at that opportunity and say, now what is being revealed here that needs Jesus? What is being revealed here that maybe is being wrongly informed by something other than the gospel? How do we now bring the truth of Jesus into this situation so that conflict goes from what feels very, very uncomfortable to what leads to transformation into the character of Christ Jesus? And so we just learn how to see conflict as an opportunity versus something we should run from or feel like it's a failure in some sort.
We've got about maybe 3.5 minutes left. One of the stories you tell is about a gentleman who's kind of older, had, you know, been kind of watching you from the distance for a while, and then you know, he was asking about, you know, does this sort of all of life discipleship sound like a cult? I mean, I think he was kind of wondering, what would you say to those who are wondering, you know, do I really want to be all in like this?
Yeah, you know, I think the definition ultimately of a cult, you know, the word cult is that, you know, we get culture from it. So in a sense, we're creating a kingdom culture. The problem when we think of cults is we tend to think of another person other than Jesus Christ as the head. And when you look at Jesus being the head and you say, you know, he's trying to create a kingdom culture, a people who live for his glory in all of life. And when we realize the scriptures say, you're not your own, you've been bought with a price, therefore honor God with your body. I think in that sense, when we understand that real life, real abundant life is living for Jesus' glory in everything and with Jesus' power.
I think we lost the phone connection there. All right. Talking with Jeff Vanderstel. The book is called Saturate, and the subtitle is Being Disciples of Jesus in the Everyday Stuff of Life. He's not back. Maybe we can try and get Jeff, sorry, we lost you for a minute there. So.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where I got cut
off. We're just talking about, you know, building a kingdom culture. We'll let you just kind of finish with maybe a challenge for all of us to be willing to join the work that God wants to do in our lives.
Yeah, I would just encourage you to really embrace the fact that when Jesus died on the cross for our sins, he didn't die just so that we could go to church on Sunday, but he died so we could be brought into an abundant life with him, where he is working in and through us in every single aspect of our entire life. And to walk that kind of life is the most fulfilling, amazing, satisfying life there ever was. So I just want to call you into the life that Jesus died to purchase you for.
Jeff, if people want to find out more about maybe your work, it's the Soma Family Churches, or just more about Saturate, anything that you recommend?
Yeah, you can go to wearesoma.com for the Soma Family Churches, and you can go to saturatetheworld.com to hear more about the book. And we're going to be releasing a whole bunch of training and support for people to grow in this more and more in this coming months.
Saturatetheworld.com. Sounds
yep.
good. All right. Jeff, thank you for joining us today, for your encouragement, and for for helping us to live for Jesus in the everyday stuff of life. So what do you have going on today after this? Some everyday mundane stuff?
I'm actually going to be going and meeting with some people over lunch and also working on a message about prayer and how we begin to walk with God in prayer. So thanks.
Good to talk with you. Jeff Vanderstelt is author of the book called Saturate, Being Disciples of Jesus in the Everyday Stuff of Life. And he's the leader for the Soma Family of Churches, it's S-O-M-A, and lead pastor at the Doxa Church in Bellevue, Washington. And you can find out more about the book and some of his writings at saturatetheworld.com. As you mentioned, there'll be more material coming out here on that in the days to come. This book is published by Crossway. And great to have you listening in today and have some good conversation about what it means to just live, do life with intention. That we've been bought with a price, and God is inviting us to experience the abundant life He has for us. You can always hear the program again online. We post the podcast after the show at the Connecting Faith Show page at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.